Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, listeners, to City on a Hill. We are so grateful for this opportunity to come on and bring some really hopeful information for you for such a time as this. We've got a wonderful guest. You've heard her before years ago, and she's back on with us, Joan Landis. Hi, Joan. Hi, Joan. Can you hear me? Okay, Joan may not can hear me. I see her, but she doesn't hear me. So let's see. We're having a little bit of technical difficulty, but we know that you've got to be on with us because this is so important. Oh, she's going to try to call again. Okay. Well, I know she's going to try to call again. There she is. I see her. Okay. We're hopefully. Hey, Joan.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm grateful. Thank the Lord. This is, you know what? This is timely. It really is. And God's got you in the midst of something that I think, you know, when we post this and share it on social media, they're going to just be thankful. Be thankful. Because I'm grateful. And, but as always, you know, we like to start off with prayer. So you mind if I start us off with prayer?
Well, sure. You or me.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'll start it and I'll let you close it at the end. So I'll start. Sure. And we just want to ask the Lord. Lord, we just thank you for who you are, praise you, and we thank you that you love the children more than we do. We thank you that you're going to make a way when there seems to be no way. We thank you, Lord, that you have heard the cries of many parents, grandparents. And, Lord, you're moving the hearts of men and women throughout this nation, Lord. They're seeing what's happening with the children, and they're crying out to you, Lord. We're so grateful for this opportunity. Bless Joan, Lord. You have given her supernatural wisdom and discernment, Lord, in her field, and it is so needed for such a time as this. So, Lord, please give us the words to say, Lord. Give us the wisdom, and, Lord, help the listeners be able to use the knowledge that she is going to impart because, Lord, I believe it is from you. And for such a time as this. So, Lord, give us the words to say and let the listeners be able to receive what we're saying, Lord, and do something to help their children with it. In the name we ask. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, Joan. Well, first of all, Joan, I don't know where to start. There's so much to cover. And I guess I'll go ahead and maybe start with relating it to what's going on today with parents, which you know better than most everybody because you're in that field where you're working with students, working with parents in the education field with your expertise in mental health. But I will say something that yesterday I listened to, which was a grandmother talking about something that happened to her grandson in that he, along with I think about 50 students, I can't remember how many, were chosen to attend some kind of a program the parents had knew nothing about. And the questions that were asked this young man is like, have you ever been abused by a parent? And if you have, you step over lines. And there were peers there listening to this, and they were asked very, you know, very disturbing questions that really should be between parents and children and maybe, you know, if there's a crime committed, you know, between psychologists or whatever, you know, but to be asked those questions with peers and being asked to step over a line in agreement.
Right.
That grandmother was shocked, and her grandson says, Grandma, I never want to do this again. I never want to be. And, of course, the father, when he found out about it, went to the school system the next day. And there was supposed to be another batch of kids that they were going to do that to, ninth graders. And they pulled the plug on that. But this grandma researched it, and she says from what she's researched, it's been done to 2,200 schools across the country. And, Joan,
yeah,
that's where we're at. You know, a lot of
it's a very popular experiential way to teach about so-called privilege. And I actually had it done in one of my graduate school classes. And what it does is that it forces the students to, confront. It forces them to think of the good things that have happened in their life as an unfair advantage, and that you're supposed to be ashamed of it. And it's a very powerful way, because you do it in public and you use your body to move forward or move backward, and then you turn around and realize how far behind people are that have not not had some of the same experiences in life that you have. And so it, especially for youngsters, I mean, I was a mature woman when that happened, and I knew exactly what was happening in the moment. And, you know, I confronted the teacher on it, and I'm like, you know, this is setting people up to make distinctions and to think badly about themselves, and to put people in opposition to each other instead of unifying the group. And it's a very powerful and popular experiential technique that leftists use in order to make people ashamed of the advantages they may have had in life because of the good decisions of their parents, grandparents, and themselves. So I have actually experienced that on my own, and it's a very false equivalency. Logically, the experiment doesn't it ends up with people believing a fallacious situation. Powerful. It speaks to your emotions. And so that's why it's an epidemic right now. So I think it's really important for parents to, sit down with their kids and say, listen, you know, if you ever have a teacher that wants you all to line up on a line and take one step forward if you're born in America, and, one step backwards if you're an immigrant, and four steps forward if your parents went to college, and three steps back if your mom never worked minimum wage. I mean, it's just, you know, that to sit down with your kids and say, listen, that is trying to divide people and pit people in groups against each other and make people feel like they're oppressed and make people feel guilty for the good decisions of their parents and grandparents and themselves. And that's not a way to grow a strong country. We all need to be in this together. We all need to help each other, and we all need to appreciate people who are making good decisions, and to assist other people to make good decisions, and not validate the victim culture, where people who end up on that back row are resentful, victim-y, disempowered, and actually hateful. So I think it's a great, you know, I'm really sorry that happened to that child, but it's really a lesson to all of us that we need to sit down with our kids and predict what is going to happen to them. Okay, predict what's going to happen to them in life, predict what's going to happen to them in school. And then when it happens, the kids are like, oh, wow, Mom told me this might happen, and here it is. And what did she tell me to do? She told me to walk out of class and give her a call, and she'll come pick me up. I mean, it can be a really bonding moment for parents if we are proactive, if we're educated about these things that happen, that we sit down with our kids, communicate, give them a strategy to deal with it, back them up 100%, and actually makes the family relationship closer. So that would be some of my thoughts on that.
Wow, that's a good point, Joan. But also, you know, the technique that you were talking about, what they've done with these modern ones is really, I mean, to ask a question, have you been abused by a parent, you know? And I'm thinking to myself, and you're doing it in front of your peers, and now in this instance, it was like there was peer pressure to make them go over that line and incriminate,
sure.
you know, a parent.
Sure.
And I'm thinking,
yeah.
You know, like the grandparent was saying, you know, they broke so many, in her thought, you know, privacy rules or, and what are your thoughts on that? I mean, really, when they're doing it in front of peer pressure like this.
Right. So this is a big breach of any kind of ethics that should be happening for teachers or even for mental health professionals, that unless there's informed consent for something like this that makes a child vulnerable emotionally, that it's actually a significant breach of ethics. It's basically teaching malpractice. Okay, these type of experiences and this type of data mining for children's emotional trauma is not the purview of teachers. Teachers are not trained for it. Most teachers don't want to do it. That's not what they want to be doing. Now, leftist teachers with an axe to grind, they love this stuff. They love it. This is where they run to. And so that's why we as parents and school boards need to be very, very clear that teachers are not trained in any of the processing of personal or emotional trauma, and that data mining and pressuring children to reveal trauma in their past to a group that is not trained and has not had their parents consent to mental health treatment by a professional, it's grossly unethical. It's close to being abusive, actually. And I'm just really surprised that my profession, the counseling profession and the psychotherapist profession, are standing aside and allowing this to happen, because the teaching profession is really encroaching on the turf of trained mental health professionals, and there ought to be massive screaming about it. There's not, and I think I could tell you some reasons why, but I'm with you, Diana. It's unethical to the nth degree to do that to a vulnerable child.
Well, one of the things that's happened is, and I'll mention it, and then we're going to go to solutions too, and I'm going to encourage anybody that's got questions also, if they're listening and they'd like to ask you a question right at the you know, the last half hour, that we'll take in some questions. But the Republican National Committee passed a resolution where when it comes to sex ed, instead of a parent being surprised, and lo and behold, that child has already been told all sorts of things, that instead of the opting out that we're so used to having to do, the resolution calls for the parents to have the ability to opt in. If you want your child to really listen to that kind of stuff, then you have to sign and agree that they, you know, they will listen in and be a part of it. So I'm thinking, Joan, you know, one of the problems that we're saying is the sexualization of children, and, you know, thank God for you and the voice of reason. You know, we had a problem where we were trying to draft anti-bullying, but part of it we were concerned was because, you know, with anti-bullying, they're opening up doors to make every kind of lifestyle be respected, and then there's books, and before you know it, it's sex ed all over the place, you know, different kinds of sex ed and how to protect yourself, supposedly. But with the wrong people heading it, it can go the wrong way. So people really need to be careful for their children's sake, because once they see it, once they hear it, it's like, you know, abuse. It's very hard to delete it, like Miss Betty was saying yesterday. But the opt-in is one of the things that we're going to try to put more information on in these Stop Common Core groups, because every state really needs to do those resolutions and pass them in their county levels and get their legislators or their school boards, state boards, to pass these resolutions. And that gives you know, tools for a parent that cares about their child to be able to fight. So that's very powerful. So I mentioned that ahead, but I want to go into something that I think they need to really get a hold of, and that is the information of what you're trying to do. And if you don't mind, just introduce yourself. I can't do a good job of telling about what you do because you do so much. But I know there's the Kid CEO and the Resilify, which is really, I'm believing it, these things are going to be such a godsend. I mean, you have hit on something that I've looked at the website, and just the idea of these two things is exciting to me because these are going to be tools for parents. So, Joan, if you don't mind, just share with the audience a little bit about your background and then tell them what you want them to know about these programs.
Sure, absolutely. My name is Joan Landis. I am a trained and licensed psychotherapist. I treat diagnosable mental health disorders in children, teens, individuals, and couples. I do a lot of couples counseling too. I've worked in residential treatment centers with troubled teens for years, and I've worked in private, public, and faith-based agencies. And I am really, really excited because we have some possibilities here with the internet to put the power back in the hands of parents, and that we don't have to wait for the government to wake up and smell the coffee, that we can take action right now that's going to make a real difference to our families and to our children, while some of the rest of us are working on the political end with legislators. Now, before I actually go there, I just want to address what you brought up with the opt-in. So I want to just address that for a second, and then we'll go to this other. So opting in is a very powerful concept because in mental health, it's called informed consent. And before anything is ever engaged in with a client, especially a minor client, that the parent always legally and ethically has every right to have informed consent about what is happening to your child. And then when the child engages in it, that parent has rights to know the updates and the progress and the details of how that child is reacting to that intervention. And when people in the schools are talking about such tender and high-stakes topics, the very minimum is that we protect children and protect families by an informed consent, a.k.a. obduction. So I just wanted to put a little bit of clarity on that. Another piece with that is I don't understand why we don't have closed-circuit cameras in every schoolroom with record audio recordings of what that teacher is teaching. Why don't we have that? We need that to protect the children. And any teacher that has a problem with that, I would say, then you know what? You shouldn't be teaching. You should be very transparent in what you're doing with other people's children for the majority of the day. To me, that would solve a lot of the problem, because if parents can log into a parent portal and actually listen to what that teacher is teaching, that teacher is going to be a lot more reasonable. And so to me, that's one of the great solutions that the people simply aren't looking at. We have cameras on buses now. We have cameras on school hallways. They need to be in the classrooms as far as I'm concerned. Okay. So let's get back to some really exciting developments for parents. And two of these are something that really can be a game changer as far as your child's education. So the first one is a website that is called Resilified, and that word comes from Your Resilience Fortified. So the website is online courses of lessons and courses that teach parents and children together, nothing behind the parents' back. Parents and children can log on together on resilified.com and listen to the online lectures and do the action items so that they can learn the skills that resilient people and resilient families know. Often, people whose families are struggling, they want to do better, but they don't really know how. And they might be able to read a book, they might not, and it doesn't really translate into any long-term changes for that family, long-term improvement. And so Resilified really is the space between self-help and professional help. It's the space in between for people who know they want something, but they don't necessarily want or need counseling. So, but what it is, it's the lectures and information that I give my clients in my office, and often charging close to $200 an hour for the same information that is now available online at resilified.com. That's spelled R-E-S-I-L-I-F-I-E-D. There's three I's in the middle, two E's on the outside. And you can go onto that website and learn the skills that resilient families and resilient people already know. It really is giving people the secrets to true resilience. Parents and children can do it together, and they can learn the skills together. Right now, I've got a couple that are coming into me, and they're paying $110 for 50 minutes. And in only 4 weeks, they are like, no, it's four sessions. They're doing two sessions a week. It's like their whole family culture has changed. They are so excited. They're teaching these concepts to their children with great results, and they're so excited. They're like, can I tell my friends about this? And I'm like, absolutely, tell anybody around about it. But that's kind of what happens, is that people start understanding these concepts, and they get so empowered and so excited. They're like, wow, I have hope now that we can change some of these behaviors in my children, in myself, in our family, that have just kind of shot ourselves in the foot, maybe for generations. And it's a really, really empowering and exciting possibility. So right now, so I'm talking, September 20th or so, right now it's free. You can get on for free, make an account, and start taking the courses. There's prerequisite courses. Course one is prerequisite for all the rest of the courses. And then you can kind of pick and choose after that if you want. There's also a place where you can take a quiz. It's a 40-question quiz, and it assesses maybe some of the areas that you might want to bone up on. And so it will give you course recommendations based on your answers to the assessment. So that's an optional thing too. And so for right now, for the next little while, it's absolutely free. And if you want to get on, log in. Start with course one, give feedback, on the forums, and tell us what works for you, tell what you would like shifted or something, and I guarantee you, it can literally be life-changing. It can change your family tree to learn these skills. And the cool thing is, you don't have to be sitting there with a book. You can listen to it in your car, like a podcast. You can watch it like a video with your child. It's really portable and accessible, because the reason I have spent 2.5 years and $20,000 on this website is because I got tired of people calling me and saying, our family needs something. It needs something. But I work full time. I don't have time to come to counseling, or you're too far away. I can't drive to Utah, or we just don't have the money. And a lot of times when I would hear that, my heart would just break, because I knew there were things that really could make a difference. And, a lot of people, things like this in self-help books just don't translate to reality. And so a self-help book isn't going to do it for them. And so that's why Resilified is such an amazing opportunity. I actually talked to the superintendent of the largest school district in California. It's one of the poorest school districts in the nation. And I talked to him and I said, I would like to offer this just as a freebie
for the families in your school district that they could log on and they could start learning this at home with each other. And it might be the most important thing they learn in their whole school career is how to have true emotional resilience and the true ability to self-motivate and the true ability to not get stuck in negative thinking and victimology. And he was really, really excited. So the site is just now within the last week operational, and I'm just inviting people in general to log on and just see what you think. It will become a paid subscription site in the near future. It'll be $25 a month or $25 a course, however people want to do it. So there is that, and it's really, really exciting. I've already gotten good feedback, and it's just fun to see that. So that's
Joan, that is going to be such a blessing. Yeah.
Yeah. I've just had such great results with these, teaching these concepts to people in my practice for years and years. And it's just time to share it. It's just time to share it and make it accessible for everybody and not just for a select few. So we're trying to do our best.
Well, it's a big help, and really, you know, I think you've mentioned it in one of your videos, and we have a website, hopeinc.tv, and we would like to invite folks to go to that website, hope, H-O-P-E-I-N-K, not I-N-C, but I-N-K, .tv, and you will find some of Joan's videos on it. Joan's been fighting for children in education for such a long time. So we've got quite a few videos, really. We haven't got all of them uploaded there, but we've got some. But and it's got links to Resilified and QCEO, and we've got some ideas, other ideas that we hope will help. We've got Ms. Barbara Moore that's got an idea, and we're going to be talking about that on another show. But there's a lot of tools that we're hoping to make available for parents. But while we're talking some more, I'd like to make the phone number available if anybody would like to call in. This was not announced. We do a lot of things just when we can, you know, because everybody works. All of us are working, trying to do other things. But we know it's important, and this is a podcast, so you can listen to it if you miss some of it. Just go to hopeinc.tv, and you will see the link to the blog talk right on the very front page. But you can call in if you want to call in. Call to 845-277-9431, 845-277-9431, and I'll mention it again, 845-277-9431. So if there's anybody out there that happen to catch us and would like to call in, have a question for Joan, please call in. But I want to ask Joan, you know, one of the things that people talk about is there's an awful lot of suicides going on. And, you know, that was one of the concerns you had when you first looked at this Common Core. And I remember you saying that, you know, we are free, independent thinkers in this country. That's the way we try to raise our children. But that this Common Core was a lot of groupthink, consensus building. And you were warning us at the very beginning in 2010 or 2011, I can't remember exactly when you first looked at this, that, you know, this is going to make kids easily manipulated, easily triggered. And I remember going into a school's public library, elementary school, and I took a picture of the books that were there, and it was very dark books. There was one that's called, I remember, The Skull of Truth. Well, the only truth was somebody came out of the closet. But a lot of the books were like Dungeons and Dragons, almost, you know, kind of books, very dark. And, you know, they took away the old books that we used to love growing up. And as Barbara said, those old books taught us a lot about this country, the greatness of this country, how to treat one another, you know, Oliver Twist, things like that. So we've come a long way. And now one of the things that I do remember you, I think, mentioning was how kids will react to stress. And you did say that Common Core you know, is bringing more stress, and already one out of every so many children already have other stress. But then when you bring in this high sex testing and the other stress, it's going to come out, and bullying is one of them. And, you know, people will say, oh, that child committed suicide because she was bullied or he was bullied. But people do not really understand that all these stressors, that bullying is like one of the signs of the trauma, and that they're lashing out. Is that not right?
Sure. Anytime anyone is under stress, the presenting behavior will be just a myriad of dysfunctional things. And bullying certainly is an example of a stress reaction. No question. There's just a plethora of stress reactions that we're seeing with children now that we never used to see. It's an interesting thing because I have yet to see that show the number of homeschoolers that are killing themselves. I think the number is like a big fat zero. And now I have to make a qualification with that. I would like to see the statistics that say how many homeschoolers who have homeschooled for at least 2 years previous are ending their lives. And the reason that you have to make that distinction is because sometimes when kids really are very troubled, their parents will withdraw them from school and homeschool them. And the child still is very traumatized and hasn't developed new coping skills. And so they could feasibly end their life and be, you know, technically homeschooled. But I think that if it would be very instructive to see the statistics on how many children who have been homeschooled for 2 years previous are ending their lives. And I think the number would be shockingly small, because children in homeschool, for the most part, have very healthy relationships. They don't have bullying. They don't have the peer pressure. They don't have the social media. They're not on drugs. They're not having random sex and feeling terrible about it. And so I've never heard anybody be very damning of the public school system. I think you could make the case that public school itself, the way it's set up now, along with other cultural stressors, is the straw that's breaking the camel's back here. And that if we can change the school system so that it's more like it used to be, so it's not the high-stakes testing, so that it's not the all of the hoops that teachers have to jump through just to keep their jobs, so that the teachers aren't always in fear of being reprimanded or, you know, having observers come and rate them and judge them and even possibly losing their jobs or their position, that kind of stressor is what filters down to especially vulnerable children, and it's too much. They are in so much pain that they think the only way to get out of that pain is to impulsively end their life. So I'm just really intrigued with this possibility of making a distinction between teens that have been homeschooled for 2 years or more and teens that are in the public school system or even private school system, that because many private schools buy into the Common Core paradigm. Just because you have your kid in private school does not mean that they aren't having a lot of the same protocols imposed upon them and their teachers. So that would really tell us a lot about suicidality. And even to challenge our legislators and say, if getting rid of Common Core or if getting rid of the high stakes testing would save the life of even one child, would you do it? And that would be a very sobering question to ask legislators, because I think the answer would be actually no, they wouldn't. And so what they're saying is the most vulnerable teens are being sacrificed on the altar of high-stakes testing and Common Core and federal control and the globalist elite agenda. that they are willing to sacrifice vulnerable teens' lives to that. And I think that should be a wake-up call to every single parent about what the system is really trying to benefit. As far as suicidality is concerned, as far as the Common Core type of approach, the Fed Ed, the ESSA, which is how we talk about it now because that was the latest legislation, I'm seeing it as a significant stressor both on the child as an individual and the fact that it interferes with the relationship with the child, with their teacher, and even with their peers. And relationships, healthy, solid relationships, are the very best way to inoculate children against suicide. Random programs in schools, having a plethora of mental health counselors on staff, that's not going to help hardly at all. What's going to help is healthy relationships and a good skill set with something that like teachers and that children and parents can learn. The resilience skills that are in something like resilicide.com, those are the things that will be the most helpful as far as suicidality is concerned. Not more programs, more mental health counselors, more money, more invasive questionnaires to children, more anti-bullying programs. No, I don't believe that at all. Here's another interesting fact. The leftists get away with this assertion that bullying and the LGBT or transgender, so-called transgender kids are killing themselves because of bullying and because the society doesn't embrace their differences enough. Pretty unchallenged. The reason it goes unchallenged is because the leftists can point to a number of troubled children that have killed themselves and say, see, they just came out as homosexual or transgender and they killed themselves. So obviously it's because they weren't loved enough. They weren't accepted by society or they were bullied. Well, here's my question with that. Here's my problem with that. First I would ask a leftist or a liberal, do you feel like the nation, our culture now in 2018 is more supportive of teens who are homosexual or so-called transgender? Do you feel like we're more supportive now than we were in 1930, 1940, and 1950? I think that would be an interesting question because 99.9% of them will say, well, yeah, we're better about supporting our kids now than in 1930, 40, and 50. Okay? So let's look at the FBI statistics on teen deaths in 1930, 1940, and 1950s. Do you know what it shows? Very, very low numbers of deaths from all causes. Not even just suicide, but all deaths. Very low. And it started spiking up with a significant jump in the 70s and a very significant jump in suicides in the end of the 70s, right when the homosexual movement was starting to gain a lot of public traction. So here's my problem with the premise that our repressive society is creating suicidal, LGBT teens. If that's true, where were the deaths in the 30s, 40s, and 50s? They weren't there. And you can't make the case that suicide was so shameful that people covered it up by calling it an automobile accident or a farm accident because just we're not there. The kids were not dying. So for that reason, I don't buy the premise that it's societal rejection that makes the problem. Actually, the premise I think that the liberal activists are pushing children who are already troubled, they're already questioning, they're already not sure, They already have a trauma background. They already have family dysfunction. They are already questioning themselves, that the liberal activists push them to identify in ways that are counterculture, and they're not equipped to deal with all of the internal chaos that that creates for them. And so for me, I think it's the liberal activists pushing troubled children to identify as LGBT that actually have the blood on their hands. Now, I know that's a powerful assertion, but that's where I am on it. I think that that's the best explanation for this significant hockey stick increase in the graph on suicidal teens that started right about the time the homosexual movement started getting traction in our culture. So there's that point. And I think that this needs to be addressed in legislative sessions. I think it needs to be addressed on social media. When people just buy into the premise that, oh, it's because of bullying, oh, we're just not understanding enough, I don't think so. I think there's huge problems with that. And when we swallow that premise, then we're toast, because then all we can do is become more and more accommodating. And I don't believe that's the road out of this. I think the road out of this is true resilience, true authentic relationships, and also there's really cool research that's fairly well. I mean, it's not new. But one of the best things that parents can do for children in lower SES demographic, that, you know, poor, more disadvantaged children and families, one of the best things you can do to have your child be successful in life is to give them a spiritual foundation and contact with healthy, organized religion. That's one of the best things as far as resilience and life success that a family that doesn't have a lot of financial resources or may have troubled family relationships, that organized religion and that spiritual, existential answers to the questions of life are one of the best things that parents can do. And the cool thing is, going to a good church is a really, it's not that difficult, people. And it's not like you can't afford to go to church. We can all afford to go to church. And so I really like that piece of research, too, that shows that that's one of the best things parents can do to prevent suicide and prevent dropping out and all of that. So, yeah.
Wow, Joan. I just, you know, I think I love it because one of the things that you told me in the very beginning when we first started talking to you was about the latest in neuroscience, which was really proving that what the Bible said was true about, you know, help these kids to think about things that are holy, good, and pure. And I just love that because I'm thinking you're making that child feel very, you know, encouraged. And when they feel loved, when they feel good, they tend to learn better, I would think. And I think that's one of the things that this nation was founded on. When you look at the founding fathers, and you've got the speech from Benjamin Franklin who says, you know, have we forgotten our powerful friend? And he was saying, you know, we need prayers in these halls of Congress every day because we know it works. You know, he helped us through the fight with Great Britain. You know, have we forgotten that? You know, we've got to keep on praying. And faith does matter, and it's foundational. And when I think of the founding fathers, and, you know, we had David Barton speak, and you were one of the speakers, and he was talking about the math that they used to do. I mean, people that think they're very smart and have to use a calculator, I mean, those generations back then were doing mental math that would take a calculator today. And today they can't even give change in McDonald's anymore. A lot of these children, we have so dumbed them down. So for people, if you're an atheist but you love your child, you need to know you're not giving that child the best education.
You're not even giving your child the best hope of resilience. okay? Because one of the great sources of resilience, one of the great sources of individual worth, right, is when we aren't dependent on our peers for our self-worth. We aren't dependent on approval, achievement for our self-worth. Instead, we know if you believe in God, that we are his children. We are God's children. And that is what gives us and instills in us our worth. And it's unchangeable. It doesn't matter if you are crippled. It doesn't matter what color you are. It doesn't matter what sex you are. It doesn't matter if you're smart, dumb. It doesn't matter if you're rich, poor. You have inherent worth because you are God's child. Now, an atheist can't give that to their children. An atheist can't say, it doesn't matter what happens in school, it doesn't matter what happens with your friends, it doesn't matter what happens in the world, you are still worthwhile because you're God's child. They can say, well, because you're human. And the child will say, well, let's see, I've seen 100 million humans die by genocide in the 20th century, and I don't look very worthwhile. So what? So really, parents, if you can figure out, if you can connect with a faith-based congregation where your child can feel an extra layer of community support, extra layer of loving relationships that love him or her because of who they are, not because of what they look like, not because of what they do, but because of who they are, that is one of the biggest gifts that you can give your child. And I actually think that's one reason that we are seeing so many volatile, vulnerable children in this culture, because so many families have walked away from faith in God. And they've walked away from that extra layer of community support and that extra layer of cognitive understanding of their inherent worth as a child of God that will never change. You know, you don't have to earn God's love. He loves you because of who you are. You're his child. Just like your child doesn't have to earn your love, you will always love that child because he's your kid, right? Now, along with that, God has, he has total love, but he also has totally loving boundaries, and that's a different discussion. Parents do the same thing. You know, it's like, Johnny, love you, and that room needs to get clean. How can we work on that together? You know, it's two sides to the same coin. But it's a powerful formula for children's resilience to get connected with a healthy religious congregation and allow that to bolster and support that child's feeling of safety. And just like you said, safety and love and desire to learn and desire to be productive. So, yeah, I'm totally on board with you there, Diana.
Wow. Well, Joan, there's so much more to talk to, but I think we got started on some things that's really going to help. So if you don't mind, mention again about the programs, Kids CEO, and for those that are just, you know, just now tuning in, explain to them a little bit about Resilified and Kids CEO, please.
Okay, well, I really didn't get to Kids CEO school. I really didn't do that, but I can touch on a little bit, and maybe in a future podcast we can go into it more. But kidceoschool.com, that, you know, it's like Kid Chief Executive Officer. That's what it means. That website is devoted to empowering children and their parents and families to have children start their own small businesses, even as kindergarten age. And the benefits are amazing as far as actual appreciation for school subjects. Suddenly kids want to learn math. They know if they're getting cheated out of their money or not. I mean, it's brilliant. And on the site, we have over 300 just ideas to start kids thinking about businesses that they can do even as a kindergartner. And so parents might say, well, why would I want my kids to do a small business? There are tons of reasons. But one powerful reason is that your child can actually earn enough money with their own small business to pay their tuition to the private school of your choice. Do you see what a game changer that is? Suddenly, if we teach our children to earn their own money, every child could go to private school. It doesn't matter if the family is poor or struggling. That in itself can change the educational landscape and empower children. The other thing is it teaches children to be self-reliant and not reliant on the government. And it emotionally, it turns these snowflake kids into snow shovel kids. It makes them very resilient, very proactive, very hardworking, very tuned into adults and not just peer dependent. It helps them want to be motivated and to be good workers and be productive because the rewards are real and they're tangible. So go on kidceoschool.com. You can watch my short video there. You can see some of the features of it. We are going to be getting online courses on that site quite soon. But just even exploring your own, the ideas of how my child could start their own small business. I know that each of my homeschooled children had their own small business, and it made it so they could graduate college with extremely little debt, just almost no student loans, because they paid for everything themselves. And it was so cool because when it came time to write their essay and their applications to get into school, they didn't just say, I was a member of a National Honor Society and we met once a year. It was like, no, I ran my own small business. And it was great. And, boy, college boards will look at that and go, dang, this is kind of a cool student we'd like to have in our school. So that's the short story on kidsceo.com. Resilify.com is a website where I teach on online courses the skills that I teach my clients in my psychotherapy office for almost $200 an hour sometimes. And you can get them right now for the next 30 or 60 days for free. And then after that, there's still an insanely reasonable price of $25 a course or $25 a month for the subscription. So anyway, those are two cool possibilities, and I hope people will get on and have fun with those and give some feedback.
Oh, yes, I hope so. We're trying to share that, but as always, Facebook tries to limit the reach
of
where this can be posted. I just noticed that. So, but I'm thinking some people saw it, and with God, all things are possible. And you know, he said, ask if it be according to his will, and his will is that the children not be led to slaughter, not be led to sin, and that's what, unfortunately, the master plan of the so-called planners of this Common Core and ESSA. I know it's mixed in with businesses that just want to make more workers, but there's other planners who have really worse plans for these children than to be future busy worker bees. And but altogether is very stressful to that precious child of yours at home, that student of yours. And so we hope that you'll share what Joan has shared. Please go to her website and also go to hopeinc.tv. We want to make hopeinc.tv be a place where you can conversate about concerns with Common Core. There's comments that you can make and people can give feedback. So we're hoping people will tune into that, give us ideas. And if you want to invite some of our speakers, Joan, Troy Towns, they are ready and willing to speak to parents. So please, just let us know. Just let us know. And they're already starting to do that. Well, they've been doing that, really, but they're just very willing to really help. So please use the information, and we're going to close in prayer. And I'm going to ask Joan to please pray for all of us, the children most especially, if you don't mind, Joan.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much. Heavenly Father, we are so grateful for this opportunity to talk about principles which will help this next generation to rise up and take their rightful places as citizens and as healthy family members and as thy servants, and less
bless all of those who may listen to this, that the fire in their heart will be started, that they can have the fire of hope, and that they will be able to see the absolute necessity of saving their children from the systems that would hurt and lead astray their children from thy paths. And we're so grateful for Diana and all the great things that she does, and bless her and bless all who listen, that this will motivate some change and some action. And we say these things in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. And listeners, please go to hopeinc.tv, click on the blog talk link, and get some more of our podcasts. We have a wonderful, wonderful new podcast that we're just doing now, and some old ones that are just really precious too. So come and join in. We'll try to do this again Monday night with Miss Barbara Moore and with Joan again too. So God bless everyone. Good night. Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye. You're welcome.
Bye.
Goodbye.